Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracer recording at 9:03 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is January 16th, and today was a relatively quiet day on stock markets. Following an incredibly impressive start to the year, the majority of stock markets have been going sideways, really, for the last 10 days or so, and that was very much the case in here today. The exception was the Nikkei, which was down 2.5%. And that probably has much more to do with the yen's comparative strength over the last 2 days than any other factor, because the two markets are pretty much interlinked. China finished off its lows, but still down on the day. And the majority of stock markets in Europe were relatively quiet. The FTSE was down about 0.25%, the CAC was up by about 0.33%, and perhaps the worst performer was the Italian index, down about 0.75%. And on Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down very slightly, the S&P was actually unchanged, and the Nasdaq was up a bit, not least because Apple pushed back above $500 in here today. And having broken below that level yesterday, it really did need to push up, and push up strongly today, and it was up by about $23. It'll need to follow through tomorrow to really suggest that support has been found and that the $500 area continues to represent a place where people are willing to pay for Apple at this juncture. It remains in a downtrend, and it will have to break its progression of lower rally highs to really suggest that demand is back in the driver's seat beyond the very short term. In the commodity complex, it was pretty weak for the precious metals in the early part of the day, but they reversed their declines, and gold having been as low as $1,673, closed out the day at $1,680. And silver, having been down on the day, closed out at relatively unchanged, but both platinum and palladium are particularly noteworthy. Palladium was as low today as 705 and closed out the day at 722. And it's a clear leadership position within the precious metal complex. And the fact that platinum is rowing in behind it and was really quite steady in here today, and platinum has been up on consecutive days. So the fact that it has paused here in the region of $1,700 is perhaps not so unexpected, and the fact that it hasn't come back in a dynamic way suggests that this is still a demand-dominated environment. And in the government bond markets, it was a reasonably quiet day, and over the last week we've had a fairly substantial gain for JGBs, and they extended their advance in here today. But that's pretty much the exception, and while we've had a bounce in US Treasuries and a bounce in gilts, other markets, for example the Swiss 10-year, have been really quite weak, and they haven't really rallied in line with some of these other markets. So the commonality that was such a feature of the sovereign bond markets over the last number of months has broken down, and we're now starting to see that some of these markets are being appraised really more on their individual merits rather than as an asset class as a whole. And in the commodity complex more generally, oil, having been really quite weak yesterday, was a little bit steadier in here today, but certainly not in a dynamic fashion, and West Texas Intermediate is still here in the region of $94. Natural gas has paused in the region of $3.40, but so far its bounce has been pretty dead cattish, and it's going to have to do substantially more, and particularly sustain a move above 350, to really suggest that demand is coming back into a position of dominance here. The industrial metal complex has been quite weak over the last 10 days, and what we're seeing is that with the really quite impressive move that we've had in China, and the fact that the industrial sector is moving to a position of outperformance, and when we see companies like Honeywell and Tyco International, GE, moving to positions of relative outperformance, then it does suggest that something important is happening in the industrial sector. And in the industrial metals, we're seeing that this weakness is very much a factor of just exactly is what is China going to do in terms of stimulating its economy. And so far, what we've seen is that they've been really very targeted. And the fact that they have opened up the QFII program and the RQFII programs to additional input, and that they've made a commitment that when it reaches its upper limit, they're going to extend that, that's aimed at attracting foreign investment without really having to do an awful lot other than change regulations. So we're not going to see the kind of massive stimulus and infrastructure build that we saw back in 2009. What is much more likely is that any building that takes place will be on a targeted basis. And if we do see that there is going to be a move in building, it's likely to be in home building, because this stimulus program, if one does start to evolve, is going to be aimed at the consumer. And everything that we've heard and everything that has been laid out in the five-year plans is about moving up the value chain in terms of manufacturing and improving the standard of living of China's vast population. The Rubicon has been passed in the last few years, where China no longer gets as much GDP growth for its buck spent on infrastructure than it does on its people. And that means that we can anticipate that the focus of attention is going to be on the consumer. And since that's the case, it's little wonder that we've seen such a large number of these consumer-oriented shares moving to positions of outperformance. And Nestle is a case in point, and it's benefiting from the weakness of the Swiss franc as well. But Mondelez International, which is the international arm of Kraft, has rallied particularly impressively over the last couple of weeks. And the number of those types of shares is really very impressive indeed. And we've seen such a fantastic advance in MasterCard and Visa over the last couple of months. And it does look now that American Express is going to follow suit. And all of these companies share a common attribute in that they are truly global in their outlook. And they're tapped into the evolution of the global middle class. And they remain in consistent uptrends. So despite the fact that people are still really worried about volatility and that the equity in asset class generally is underowned and people are really heavily overweight in bonds, that in companies that are really leveraged to global growth, we get less volatility and generally higher yields and more consistent uptrends. And a consistent trend is a trend in motion. And as long as it remains in motion, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And nothing has really happened to really question the integrity of the autonomy's theme, because we remain in the greatest age of humanism that there is ever likely to be. I've done an extensive piece on commodities in here today in Comment of the Day. And whereas it was a really easy call 10 years ago to talk about the supply inelasticity meets rising demand theme, because it was applicable to just about every commodity, but that is no longer the case. And the secular bull in energy commodities has probably ended. And while there is still an elevated pricing environment, the likelihood is that over the medium term we're going to see some downward pressure in the energy complex. So, as a cohesive group, it's no longer appropriate to talk about a secular bull market in all commodities, because energy no longer fits in that bill. On the other hand, the flow of capital into precious metals and the fact that there has been an abject failure to increase supply, and the fact that demand from in the investment community, not least in ETFs, continues to advance, suggests that this is still very much a secular bull market. And just those two simple examples, and when one looks at the food complex, the higher pricing environment in nominal terms has been sustained. We haven't seen any of the food commodities, particularly the grains, push back into their relative basis. Certainly, we've had more volatility in coffee and cocoa and sugar, but in the staple foods, they've held their respective gains more or less. And this is a very delicate environment because global stockpiles are at historically very low levels, and it means that the market is tight. So if we do get any form of bad weather that affects important global crops, then there is the potential for spikes in those prices. But in the absence of deleterious weather, then the chances are that we're going to see softer pricing. But we are in a new pricing environment, and it suggests that because there is a higher cost of production in just about all of these commodities, that the very low prices that prevailed for much of the 90s are unlikely to be retested for the majority of these commodities. And it does mean that each of them will have to be considered on their individual merits. And because we do have this spottiness now in the commodity complex, it reduces the inflationary problems, particularly the energy complex. And what else does that mean? But it takes the pressure off in terms of growth, and it means that the global economy can probably grow a little bit faster. Now, debt remains a significant problem, and just how that's going to be dealt with by various central banks remains really a very big outstanding question. But we remain in a medium term, really very bullish environment indeed. And the fact that we've seen such an impressive start to the year is very reminiscent of what we saw last year. So while we're presented right now with short-term overbought conditions, it does suggest that any weakness is likely to be a buying opportunity, and probably until we start to see some speculation as to what's going to happen with the debt ceiling in the latter half of February. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.